Hello, welcome to Shy Talk, an Irish history podcast. It's part two of the Roger Casement episode. Last week, we covered Casement's time in Congo and South America, and now it's the Irish part of the story. Yeah, if you're listening to this episode first, don't go back and listen to the other one. But I wanted to give a special shout out to Lynn and Ellen, fans of the show, who came into the Halfpenny Comedy Club the other day and kept me drinking there when I should have been in bed. So that's why I sound like this. But if you want to come and drink pints with myself and Jason, our live show is in the Wild Duck this day next week in Dublin. I think there's maybe like 10 tickets left for it. So go buy some of them. The link for that will be in the description of this episode, as well as all the other socials and reviews and stuff. I don't think we've asked for a review in ages. Go leave us a review, maybe. That'd be nice. I'm pretty sure our last review is someone, rightly enough, giving out about the audio quality. But we've gotten better. We've used AI software to make it sound less shit. And we're working on it. We're going through the back catalogue slowly. But yeah. Maybe give us a review. And enjoy this episode. Part two of the Roger Casement story.
Gather around now, you're in for a story. Old tales of lore all in search of a glory. History and mystery of lads, lasses and all. Discoveries and voyages, the rise and the fall. Follow me now as we go back in time. We trace the steps of Irish lineage to find. From Carlisle and Cavan and all, guide you through the ways of Shinefall.
Do you remember what happened last week, week's episode?
Yeah.
Because it was yesterday. Yep.
So, our boy,
yep.
Casement,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Livingston, I presume.
Yeah.
I remember a lot of that talk. And then there was him being great towards the people of Congo,
yep.
Screwing over Leopold, which was rightly done because he's a bad man.
Yep.
And then he went to Brazil. And have you looked up whether I'm allowed to say the P word again?
Oh, I forgot about that. No. So I don't know.
Okay.
Put the moya.
Pygmy?
Yeah.
Just Google, can we say pygmy 2023?
You say Pygmalion. Pygmies, people are ethnic groups whose average height is unusually short.
Aye.
Irish men.
Irish.
Yeah, alright. So, yeah, it's pretty much it. He helped get Leopold expelled from the Congo, highlighted similar rubber trade atrocities in Brazil and Peru, got himself...
They were making lads wear them.
They were, yeah.
It's an atrocity. It's a crime against man.
not in Brazil. They're good Catholic countries. They wouldn't have any of that sort of crack down there.
Depends on which crack.
That's true. So he's got a knighthood. He's Sir Roger Casement now.
And we also found out he's a big, dirty, stinking Republican.
Exactly. Which he's aware the nationalists back home, they don't care about that. They won't like that, in fact. So he's gotten more involved in the nationalist movement in his later years.
They won't like that. They would like that.
That he's a knight.
No, he's a Republican.
Not that he's a Sir. But he's... So the nationalists back home... They don't like that sort of stuff. They don't really trust him anyway because he's a big Protestant with mm-hmm. a capital rolling or and he works for the British consulate. He's already like a spy / ambassador and now he's a knight, which does not much good. But he's been trying to get more involved with the Irish nationalist movement. He's back on leave in 1904, 1905. He joins up the Gaelic Revival League. They're trying to get everyone on Duolingo, get Irish back going. Mm-hmm. What if we played hurling? That was their whole thing.
Played hurling in Irish?
Yeah, Oscailga. They were all about it.
I did have to play a couple of Gaelic sculls when I was younger.
Oh, yeah?
For schools, GAA.
And
when they do start talking Irish, you're like, it's like a different sport.
They understand the hurl. So he worked with the Irish Parliamentary Party on his Congo proposal to try and get them on side for the whole Congo thing. But... He thought they were soft. He didn't agree with them on home rule. He thought they weren't going far enough. He preferred a young man called Arthur Griffith and his party, Sinn Féin, which he also joined in 1905. Mm-hmm. So he's like, free Ireland. This is all while he's before he does the Peru-Brazil trip. And it's while he's fighting for the Congo.
Because this is when you said, oh, wait, I thought when he went to Congo, he didn't have
the books. It's after he came back. So the Kissinger report's like 1904. And while he's back, he joins up with Ireland.
Okay.
The nationalist movement at that point. This is before he's become a knight. But yes, they don't really trust him then. And as he goes on and gets more involved with British politics and diplomacy, they don't really trust him.
Which is fair.
It is fair.
But also, if you're going to have a sleeper agent, you'd want them in there.
Yeah. Would you? Well, maybe.
Well, you would. If you wanted like a double agent, you'd want them to be rising through the ranks of the British.
Yeah, that's true. But he's not really a double agent. He's just a guy who's very much appears to be working for the British. No, he is. He's working for the British. Then he comes over and he says, tally-ho. What?
Wouldn't be a very good double agent if everyone knew he was...
Yeah, but is he...
There's our boy right there infiltrating the British hierarchy.
Yeah. But they need to trust him. And part of that trust, he retires from the British Consul Service in the summer of 1913.
Pension?
No, probably not. Although, no, he's not old enough.
Ah, back then, though.
But he focuses his attention back in Ulster for a while. So they do like that.
Mm-hmm.
He joins up with an organization of like-minded people who are protesting against Edward Carson and the Ulster anti-home rule movement. So even though he's anti-home rule, these guys are anti-home rule in the wrong way.
Yeah.
Even though he's a Protestant against home rule, these guys are other Protestants against home rule, but they're bad.
That's how politics usually goes.
So he's up there in Ulster. They hold a protest meeting in Ballymoney called the Protestant Protest Against the Lawless Policy of Carsonism.
Could be a snappier title.
Could be snappier. It's mostly Protestants.
That's worse than Carsonia.
Carsonia is not a bad name, but here's another good name, Owen McNeill.
Mm-hmm.
So Casement helps him found the Irish Volunteers in 1913. He becomes a Gaelic League member of the Provincial Committee of the Irish Volunteers when they start in Rotunda. So they are, we've covered this in a few different episodes before, but the Irish Volunteers pop up in response to the Ulster Volunteer Force, the UVF, who are arming themselves in case Home Rule comes in. So Home Rule's coming down the line in 1914. The UVF want guns. The IV think that they should have guns as well.
Mm-hmm.
The UVF wants guns. They get them through the Long Gun Running in 1914. So they get a load of weapons in. The British Army says, don't be at that.
That's really close to another big historic Irish
one. It's all happened at the same time.
The 1913 lockout. Where Guinness crossed the picket line.
The British Army, or the British government says, we don't want any forming of militias up in Ulster. And they get the army ready to go stop the UVF. The army in the Curragh. The army says, nope, not doing it, mate. They're all our friends. They're our uncles up there. Those drunk orange hoarder, George Cross tattooed beer belly bulldogs are our boys. So it's known as the Curragh Mutiny. There's no formal mutiny, but they're basically like, if you make us do it, we'll all resign. So nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
The Irish Volunteers, they see that you can import a shit ton of weapons into a nation and nothing's really going to happen to you. So...
Mm-hmm.
So where would you go? The home of guns, America.
Fair.
So Casement goes off to America to try and source guns for the revolution from Clanagale and John Devoy. And then in July 1914, Erskine Childers and the Asgard, they bring over weapons from Germany. Casement helps organize that on the German side, which puts him on the top list of everyone's good Fenians, including like John Devoy's. Now that he's organized guns to come in, everyone's like...
You made it sound like a BuzzFeed article.
It is, yeah. Everyone's top 10 handsome Fenians.
Mm.
And now...
Now that's what I call Fenians.
Yeah. Before this, you know, he's a Protestant and he's, you know, he's handsome, but he's... has he really got the chutzpah to go through with it? But now, he's getting guns from the Krauts and bringing them over here.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good. So now he can be trusted with getting more guns from other people. So Britain declares war on Germany in 1914. On the 14th of August, 1914. It's World War I. The war to end all wars. Casement and Devoy arrange they arrange a meeting in New York with the German diplomat Count Johann Heinrich von Bernstorff and a delegation of Clanagale men. So the clan, not that clan, they propose a mutually beneficial plan. If Germany sells guns to the Irish rebels and maybe gives them a couple of people who know how to use guns, then the rebels would revolt against Britain and divert the troops' attention. You know, they distract the eye of Sauron.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good deal. Bernstorff seems keen. So Devoy wants to send a diplomat over to Germany to, like, talk this through directly. And who better for the job? He's running guns. He's a diplomat already, basically.
He's gorgeous.
He's gorgeous. No one's going to say no to him. So Casement set sail for Germany in October 1914 to try and get more guns. He's back to consulate work, but this time he's doing it for the boys. He sees himself as an Irish ambassador. And by November, he negotiated a declaration with Germany which said, "The imperial government formally declares that under no circumstances would Germany invade Ireland with a view to its conquest or the overthrow of any native institutions in that country. Should the fortune of this great war, that was not of Germany's seeking, ever bring in its course German troops to be the shores of Ireland, they would land there not as an army of invaders to pillage and destroy, but as the forces of a government that is inspired by goodwill towards a country and people for whom Germany desires only national prosperity and national freedom." So that's good. First of all, you can really trust the German document that says they won't invade your country.
Why did you do it in an English accent?
That's what Germans sound like.
That's what, okay.
You wouldn't know because you think they sound like...
Zwinglos Vitiadiat.
Basically, they're like, we'd never invade, never think of it. But if we do invade, which we will, it would only be out of respect for you. So that's pretty good. They're happy with that. So Casement's over in Berlin now. Well, he's over in Germany somewhere. And he spends most of the war trying to recruit some of the Irish Brigade. So there's about 2,000 prisoners of war over there, Irish prisoners of war, taken in the early months of the war. And he is trying to convince them to join an elite squad to go back to Ireland and fight against the British. But he doesn't have much luck. It's very hot. He's a diplomat. I don't know, because people always talk about how charming he is and how like well-spoken he is or whatever. But when it comes to this stuff, he doesn't seem to get on very well. He's just like, he's described as walking around in white linen suits into these like hot fly infested prisoner of war camps, and he's standing there with his big handsome face, and he's like, "Why don't you just come back to Ireland and fight?" And they're like, "Fuck off." "Fuck off, you punts."
Well, are we going to get back to, at some point in this episode, the rest of Joseph Conrad?
No.
Like the other quotes he had about him?
Oh, about, yeah, later on he kind of turns again him.
Yeah, when he was like, "This guy is just all words and emotion."
Yeah.
And no, like, he's not a man to get things done.
Well, we will get to that at the end. Yeah, because initially Conrad's a good friend of his, but then later on we'll see he changes his tune a bit. But yeah, in this case, he's not getting his ideas across to the working men, the soldiers on the ground. They don't want to hear it. He manages to get about 52 people out of the 2,000. And again, what he's selling them is, what if you just came back and fought against Britain?
That's over 2%.
It's not great.
That's what landlords in Ireland say when they're like, "How much can I raise the rent by every year?"
But
that's not great.
No. But you'd imagine...
He should just try to evict all the lads from the prisoner of war camps.
Yeah, just kick them all out, just send them home. Deport them.
"Sorry, lads, we're going to need this space for Airbnbs."
So he's trying to get troops. He also wants more assurances from the Germans. They promised Casement officers for the cause, you know, men who actually knew what they were doing, military men. Also more guns, and not ones from the previous century, ones from this one.
Oh, well, those guns could be from 15 years ago.
Yeah?
That's perfectly fine.
No. Well, they're from like the 1880s, the old Mausers.
That's still not... I suppose gun technology was coming on a lot at the time. Yeah. It's like getting like a smartphone 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The war really ramped up gun production. And also, he wants a submarine. I don't know why.
Soldiers at the time were like, "I'm using this gun too much. I need to put it down. What's my gun time this week?" That's ridiculous.
Remember when there used to be manual guns? I was barely on it. It was much simpler. You really, the personal touch when you shot a man, when you had to reload the pistol.
You'd be able to, the gun would fold out in two, that have buttons. You'd be able to fire it anywhere. Now it can, these new guns I fire, I can barely hear anything.
Yeah, but they want a submarine just because they're cool, I guess.
Guns are a lot like phones.
You remember, you see pictures of your grandfather pushing a pellet down a tube. Like, that looks healthy. That looks more in touch with nature. That's all I should do. I should throw out my AK-47.
You've been at war. You've been drinking the night before. You wake up the next morning. You go, "Oh no, let me check my gun. What have I done?"
I tried to take a dick pic. Oh, fuck. So he's over in Germany anyway, and he's feeling more and more isolated. He's not getting his submarine. He's starting to think that Germans aren't going to give him a submarine at all. And he's, you know, the British, Britannia rules the waves.
Oh, Britannia rules the waves.
That's the one. So not much communication getting to old Germany in like 1914, 1915. So he's not really sure what's going on back in Ireland. And he's just sort of, I don't know, it's hard.
On a side note.
Yeah.
James McLean.
Yes.
One of Ireland's main Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Hates the English.
Mm-hmm.
Last two teams.
What?
Stoke City. Yeah. That's their main song.
Oh, yeah.
And Britannia is on their crest.
Yeah.
And the next one, West Bromwich Albion.
Okay.
Another giant nod to the English. It's very tough for him.
It is. It's a rough...
Like, the only teams that want him, it's almost out of spite.
Yeah, yeah.
Like an in-joke. But fair play to you. Autistic now, too.
Yeah, yeah. I saw that. He came out full of autism. But yeah, he's not getting much messages in from Ireland or America. He's feeling alone out there. And he's not really... He's not vibing with the Germans, I think. I don't know. It's hard to know, because a lot of that could just be like... You know, I never really liked them at all, in retrospect, now that he actually never got on with them.
They're grand on their own, but once you put them in a group...
The whole thing gets a bit weird. But at some point, he's talking to... He basically decides to renounce his British knighthood. So he writes, in 1915, he writes to the British Foreign Secretary to get rid of his titles. I now beg to return the insignia of the most distinguished order of St. Michael and St. George, the coronation medal of His Majesty King George V, and any other medal, honour or distinction conferred upon me by His Majesty's government of which it is possible for me to divest myself. Just like, take it all. I don't want it. I don't want it. Get rid of it. But much like excommunication, I think it's more difficult than you would think. So it doesn't take. I think he sends a letter. Also, I guess they probably wouldn't trust a letter coming from Germany.
Is this just like trying to unsubscribe from Spotify?
Yeah, it's not. They don't make it easy.
Are you sure you want to leave the Queen?
But also, it probably seems like a...
What about if we give you a 50% knighthood?
You know what? Have it for free for 3 months. Don't even worry about it.
Well, just have it for all the family. How about your whole family are knights?
But I guess that'd be an easy espionage tactic during the war. Just start sending letters back to be like, yeah, just forge them. Like, if the letter's coming from Berlin, it's like, yeah, he doesn't want to be a knight anymore. He says, you're shit. Yeah, one of your great heroes, that guy that you love. Yeah, he says he doesn't want the knighthood anymore. He says, take the medals back. No, I'm not putting them on the phone. He doesn't want to talk to you anymore.
Because they barely exist yet.
But yeah, it doesn't take. I don't know. I don't think he has an answer on that. So he's still a knight. Because lines of communication are cut off for the most part. Because at this point, the world is at war. They can't really get messages hither or thither. So he learns about a little thing called the Easter Rising well after it's already been planned.
Okay, it was a news slow to get over to... Where is he now?
He's in Germany.
He's in Germany, yeah. Yeah. So
he... Because he's gone over there to raise weapons, get weapons and men to four a rising. And then next thing he's finding out that it's happening. It's all going... And he hasn't got fucking guns or men. In April of 1916, the German offer was basically, you know, 20,000 Monsen-Nagant rifles from 1891, 10 machine guns and ammunition for them, free of charge.
Mm-hmm.
But no officers and no boat. So 20,000 guns from the 1890s, 10 machine guns, and that was it.
That's, yeah. But
not great.
It's better
There's
than
no boat.
Not better than nothing.
Not really, no, because he's been over there for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, again, there's no, they need military officers. They need people who know
the officers
how to fire
would
it.
Be a yeah, good thing. But sure, the lads back home have been practicing with hurls.
With hurls, yeah. Yeah. This is a big,
you say what you want about an 1819 gun, it might not be as good as a 1914 one.
Yeah.
It's a lot better than hurling.
That is fair.
Unless it's in the hands of Cú Chulainn.
Yes. Okay. So it wasn't exactly what he'd hoped for. And he basically wants to hold off the rising. They're not ready. And he's not a fan of just martyrdom for martyrdom's sake, which is not the same. You know, you can't say the same for all the rest of the lads. But he wants to get word back that hold it off, it's not ready. So he sends a young man called John McGoey, McGoey, McGoey,
McGoey,
my guy. So he was recently arrived Irish American. He sends him through Denmark back to Dublin with a message for the boys: hold it off. It ain't ready. Military aid is coming from Germany, but it's not ready yet. So his orders were to get the heads in Ireland to call off the rising and merely try to land the arms and distribute them. But McGoy doesn't reach Dublin. He doesn't let the lads know. No one really knew what happened to him until much later on. It turns out he just joined the British Navy.
Was he a double agent or did he just like, I'm just getting out of this?
There's only a little footnote. So it turned out he survives the war. He goes over to America. He just died in a car accident. Or no, he died on a building site in 1925. Maybe someone got to him. But he's given this.
Wait, New York building site.
Yeah. The mob.
So who built New York?
Yeah, that's true. But
the hopes and dreams of a nation. It was definitely.
So he's entrusted with this. He's like,
sounds like the Irish went over and found him in New York and murdered him.
Maybe. This one's for Jimmy Hoffa or Roger Casement or I don't know, just get in the fucking hole. But I hadn't heard that story before. It was a pretty funny little bit. He just, I am on my way. And he just fucking joins the Brits.
two ships passing in the night. I'm going to jump on this one. It's the British one. It's safe.
But it didn't matter.
Did it say why he did that, though?
No, I think apparently no one knew what. People just assumed he was dead for years. I was only like, you know, relatively recently they've traced him.
You get to Ellis Island and his new name was Traitor.
Traitor McGoy. But it didn't matter anyway. The weapons, as they were, went over to Ireland and got captured by the British. They were supposed to land in Kerry and they got, so they're what, on the boat, the Odd Nose. It was a German boat disguised, or a German boat called the Libawa, which was disguised as a Norwegian boat called the Odd Norge.
God, did they just put a sticker over the name?
Yeah, I don't know, because I don't know what the point of that was. But
they painted, maybe.
Maybe. Don't mind us, we're just Norway.
But like Mr. McCarthy or whatever, your man down in who set up Boca Juniors, that they were like, boats were coloured by the name, by the country they were coming from.
That's true. And I get, but that seems like pretty weak espionage during the war. So let's just pretend to be Norwegian. Just paint the boat blue, I'm guessing, and then head off to sea. But the British Navy sees through it anyway. They get the guns off the coast of Kerry. Casement gets intercepted. He's coming back. He got his submarine. He's coming back in submarine. They get him as he's landing. At this point, they think he has malaria, so he's pretty fucked. They arrest him and bring him to Brixton Prison in England. I read because he was on suicide watch and they wanted to put him in the Tower of London, but there was no one trained in suicide watching there.
Okay.
As I guess they were like, oh, fucking. What? Saves us a job.
What? I guess. Okay.
Because they wanted to keep him alive for the trial. And I guess if they're sending people to the Tower of London, like, why would we stop them?
But it's like, just take their shoelaces and put them in a cell.
Well, we know that now from films. And Epstein still got away with it. So, back in 1915, who knows?
But with the 16. With the submarine?
Yeah.
How long had they been going at the time? Because it was an Irishman who invented it.
That's true, yeah. He would. Yeah.
Did like he make 18. It just for this purpose? If we say don't check it at all?
No, he made it for the Fenians. I think he made it in like the 1860s or 70s. This, at this stage, it's just the German U-boat.
Mm.
But that's the end of, Casement. Under arrest. 1916, East Horizon doesn't go well. Or it does.
I don't ruin it's it not great. For everyone.
But anyway, it ends after a few days. All the leaders are executed. I've made this joke before, but it is funny that they were just like, it's draw it out. Like, it takes like 6 months basically for them all to be executed. Connolly strapped onto a chair, shot him in the head. It's not good. People don't like that. But the big one, De Valera gets off because he's an American. But the big one is Casement then after that. How do you execute a knight? It's hard to know how famous he is. I think he's pretty famous.
Sounds like he'd be pretty famous.
He's certainly known as being...
He dethroned Leopold. That's a pretty big deal.
It is. And he's kind of like on record as being colonies bad. Mm. Rubber bad, Casement hit fire bad. But so they're kind of a bit of a tricky one, is like, how do they execute him? And they can't let him go the Dev route because Casement's very much like Dev is America at the time, which is good. Casement is associated now with Germany, which is bad. Mm-hmm. Especially his trial starts in June of 1916, and in July is the Battle of the Somme, And after that, people thought really it's not good. People stopped wearing Hugo Boss around London anyway. You know, the Windsors changed their name.
Not for too long, though.
No, not for too long. But at the time, people are out for blood. Casement is tied to Germany, seen as being a German collaborator. A lot of the boys are dying over in the Somme. It's time. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what he did in the rubber trade. That's old news. It's time to get him executed. So the issue the court has is they want him tried and executed for treason. But is it treason if what he did was committed on German soil?
Yeah.
That's what I would have thought. But they think no. So they go all the way back to the Treason Act of 1351. And like it implies that treason only counts if it happens on British soil. Anything else is an act of war or whatever.
All right, because he would have like defected, I guess, or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. But it doesn't, so then...
Because it's definitely not treason if he's been sending multiple letters back saying, I don't want the knighthood, I'm basically at war with you, and he's in a different country.
That's true, actually.
Yeah, he's not working, he's still working for the British and trying to fuck over the British. Yeah. He's clear, he's trying
very
to...
active.
Yeah, he's denouncing any right he has to any seniority or whatever.
But he is also still a British subject.
Mm.
I don't know. Anyway, they go back to read this act from the 1300s and decide to read it in the original Norman French text, which someone told me recently that the French is the official language of law. Like I guess all these old legal documents in England are in French. Even the British motto. We're looking at the old Dáil building in Ireland. The old Dáil building in Dublin. That's the Bank of Ireland now. It has the lion and the unicorn insignia up above it, mm-hmm. the old British emblem, and the motto for that is in French. They just thought the French were very fancy, even though they hated them. But anyway, this old text is in French, and they basically decide to use... They just read it in a way that, with a comma, now means treason can be carried out anywhere, wherever the king's enemies are. So, at the end of it, basically, Casement writes that he was hung on a comma because of this interpretation of it. But I would have thought that, like, getting out of it is a loophole. It is treasonous.
I don't know, though. I've
you did sort of convince me there with your half-assed approach to it. But he is a British subject.
Logic.
And he is helping Britain's enemy start a revolution. He does consider himself Irish.
The word subject is a really...
It's subjective.
It's tough to call someone. You have to... It's treason if you do anything against us. You're a subject. You're like, that's not on.
Yeah, but from their point of view, he is.
Yeah, but
he's a Briton man.
Yeah, but he's told him he's not.
But they went to this whole effort to, like, they took them ages to go back.
And why
like,
are you riding in behind the British on this?
I'm not. I'm just saying it's funny that they're like, oh, they got me out of technicalities. Like, you did do it. You were there in a submarine with the guns, mate. You were trying to overthrow the king. Like, rightly, you know, they'll say that. But he was still, you know, he was trying to depose the king.
Yeah. When he wrote hung on a comma, did he use a bunch of ellipses before?
He did. He did. He was pretty happy with that. But in August of 1916, he became the last of the leaders to be executed. But he wasn't shot like the others. He was hung on a comma. In Pentonville Prison, London, he was 51 years old. And he was, I think he has the distinction of being the only leader who was executed even though he was against the rising. He tried to stop it. Now delay it, I suppose, but it seems a little unfair.
Mm.
But yeah, he was the last of them killed. And that's it. That's the end of the episode.
That's not the end of the episode.
It is.
It's not the end of the episode.
What else is there?
There's the whole other thing.
Oh.
With the hung diaries.
The hung diaries. Yeah. Well, there was another thing that came up during his trial. There was the question of the so-called black diaries. He kept a set of diaries detailing his public life, which were referred to as the White Diaries. He also kept a counter set of diaries detailing his private life. And during the trial, the prosecution wanted them admitted, the Black Diaries, to prove that Casement was guilty but insane because of what was in the diaries. And Casement didn't stop them, but the court circulated extracts from the diaries, which implied that he was a sexual deviant because Casement was a gay man.
Hmm.
Now that would have been more shocking too if you hadn't heard the story four times already.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Yeah, because I'd said this to you before, but yeah, I heard this when I first came across this. I heard it. One of the theories, I think the going theory the theory was that the British forged these diaries to make it look like Casement was gay, to make it easier to execute him because he was a knight. And that was the going theory for decades. Like, Bertie Ahern in 1999 ordered for the diaries to be examined. So it's at least as late as that. You can find articles as late, from as late as like 2015, 2016. You can find lots of comments still to this day. There's still plenty of people who thought they were forgeries. And that's what I had heard when I was younger. And I was... I'd heard that they'd forged these diaries. Like, how could the British be so dastardly, so cowardly to do this to a man? And it's very stupid of me to. But then it seemed to be the going.
Give yourself a little bit of
like
everyone. Like, that's our government. We're saying it, leaders at the time. Yeah. Everyone was.
We'll talk about that in a second. Yeah, but it was never looked into, or it was. Basically, they couldn't wrap their heads around it.
But they'd read the first page and they'd go,
genuinely, yes. But he was gay. So, well, basically, yeah, it's still debated. But the most compelling argument I heard against it was I've listened to a couple of gay-led podcasts talking about him. There's one called Bad Gays in particular. And basically, they posited that the diaries were so gay that no one could have forged them in that period convincingly. Because they wouldn't know how. So structurally they match up. So there's two sets of diaries running concurrently and the times and whatever and the dates match up. But, you know, historians would still be like, well, it's easy to forge dates. Anyone could have done it. But the most compelling argument...
You would have had the diary to forge the hand...
You could do that.
Yeah, the writing.
But the most compelling argument is that if you were trying to forge a gay diary back in 1916, it would have been like... And then... He kissed the man upon his cheek, ruddy as it was, as is the style in such deviancy. there's no way. So basically, these are his diaries for years because he kept extensive diaries about everyone he interacted with. And they were, and a new term I heard in research of this, he was a size queen.
Yes. He
kept a list of...
Doesn't surprise me you've never heard that before.
Every name... and size of every penis that he encountered in his days, which were quite a few. So I don't know what order to do this in, but let's say the extracts.
Start at about like 7 inches and work upwards.
7 inches wouldn't even he wouldn't get out of bed for that or stay in bed for it. But extracts from the diaries included Agostino, 17 and a half, kissed many times.
17 and a half what?
X, not shaved, about 21 or 22 inches.
Yeah.
No, I think he's 21 or 22.
These are centimeters. These are ages.
Pepe, 17, bought cigarettes. Gabriel Ramos, X, deep to the hilt, very deep trusts. Sao Paulo, breeded and quick, enormous pushed, love mightily. So there's a lot of talk of getting pushed up to the hilt.
Fair play to him.
Yeah.
That's class.
This is like a Paulie Walnuts moment as well, because apparently some of his... what would you call it? I don't know. Some people were like, what happens in Congo stays in Congo. But then as the diaries progress, he moves from a top to a bottom. And then they're like, well, okay. I met. But he loved big dicks and he could not lie.
So he starts as a top.
Yeah.
And then, okay. That makes.
But
you get self-conscious, I imagine.
But it's insane.
As an Irishman.
But it's insane that he's... keeping these diaries because he's like homosexuality at the time. He would have been well aware of like Oscar Wilde's case in 1895 would have been very public. He would have been following that when he was in Congo, and like that didn't end well for Wilde. There was another case of a high-ranking British general called Hector MacDonald who was found to be gay in 1903 and he committed suicide. So that again would have been happening.
Whoa.
Yeah, like he was going
to the Clintons.
Yeah. He went to a prison cell and just so he's well aware of what would happen.
Mm.
But also, he's not just some guy. He's a guy who's like actively... He's keeping these diaries the whole time while he's fighting against Leopold. While he's fighting... Like, there's a lot of people... We talked to him in the first episode about why it's mad that no one just had him killed. He's also carrying around like enough evidence that would put him away, like discredit him for in any of these cases. It's insane that he does... I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It makes it all the sweeter.
It does.
Like, that's...
It's fucking, there's something very ballsy of it. Oh, but also, I mean, he needed something.
Ballsy?
Yeah. he needed something for the old wank bank. Just a list and list of every guy. And it was everywhere. Yeah, Congo, Sao Paulo, Northern Ireland, England, the whole arithmetic of it. But yeah, I have heard people, there is various, you know, he was paying for a lot of it, especially in Congo. But
that's good.
That's a good, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of them were probably young enough boys. It's probably not so good.
You said the youngest number.
Yeah, that was just some. I just made that up.
Okay.
I don't know. There would have been young men going into prostitution, and then it's like a power dynamic because he's a white man, put money in there in Congo. But at the same time, you know.
Yeah. No, it's not.
I don't great. Think. Yeah. But he's out of the time. Yeah. And. So he's trying to hide his gayness. So I think.
So I suppose there is like that thing we've talked about before in other like societies and cultures of. This is more open with male on male sexuality.
Maybe.
So it's, I don't know if. I just haven't looked into it enough. I don't want to besmirch the man's name.
Yeah, yeah. But it's insane that he.
Maybe they were okay with it and he just had a load of money because he was working for the British consulate.
Maybe. But it seems crazy that he wasn't. It doesn't seem like he was particularly careful about hiding it.
That sounds like not at all.
Not at all. But.
Which is class.
It is, yeah. It's insane. But so, earlier on, I think we quoted in the first bit where he talks about how he sees the atrocities in the Congo through the eyes of the Irish and how he thinks that that kind of makes it different. Than the other Europeans, but it's also through the eyes of a gay man. Well, you know, he's like an outcast, kind of. He's a British consulate, but he's also secretly, or not that secretly, gay, and he kind of knows what it is to be an outsider, and he's got compassion for the underdog or the oppressed.
Which would make you hope then that he's not oppressing them by.
Oh no! If anything, he's oppressing his dick against them, but he seems to be. Given them most of the power. But
you would hope, though, that they like have,
yeah,
because of his,
oh yeah,
his no, legacy and what he's done, that it wouldn't be a case of like the.
And I've listened to a good lot of podcasts about him in particular, and a lot of it is like, because you know how people love to be contrarian, and a lot of it is like, yeah, I really hope that he wasn't as good as
I don't know anyone who likes to be contrarian.
I really hope he wasn't as good as everyone says he is, but the more you read into him, he's like, oh, he's like the soundest man. Going. I mean, maybe he paid a few teenagers for sex, but yeah, I don't know. But anyway.
Probably not for us to.
No. But so the Black Diaries, as they were called, were debated for decades afterwards. They were kept at Scotland Yard. So they were never officially released because they weren't admitted as part of evidence in the court, but they were like secretly distributed to the court. So it got out, but it wasn't officially released. They were kept in Scotland Yard and then moved to the Home Office. They were shown to Michael Collins and Eamon Duggan during the treaty negotiations. So when they were over selling out our nation, they got to see the books. They were like, just as a little, you know, it was a deadlock and it was a hot, stuffy afternoon. They're like, do you want to go see the fucking Black Diaries? I think they maybe probably requested to see them.
Would you trust it, though?
Well,
as in, no, not like nowadays, but like back then when they went over for that, as they're like in the middle of this very important deliberation of what the country will and will not be.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, yeah, here's a.
But what, like, is it, like, do you want to see the Ark of the Covenant or Caseman's Diaries, or we've got like.
Who were planning to kill Kennedy?
Yeah, yeah. Who's Kennedy? Oh, wouldn't you like to know? Which is that you can get one mystery to sweeten the deal. But. They went and saw the books, and Duggan writes about it in the 30s, saying that Collins and I saw the diaries by arrangement with Lord Birkenhead. We read it. I did not know Caseman's handwriting, but Collins did. He said it was his. The diaries were in two parts, repeating ad nauseum details of sexual perversion, of the personal appearance and beauty of native boys, with special reference to a certain part of their anatomy. It was disgusting. So, this is him writing about it in the 30s.
Duggan,
yeah. So, but he says that Collins, yeah.
It's not great.
No, but, yeah, Collins at the time was like, yeah, that's him. But, so while he was in the Congo.
Look for a name, Fabio.
Yeah.
Okay, and just.
Or Collins just like rips out a page with his name on it and eats it. All right, for that, you get Fermanagh. Can we say no more about it? So Casement, he'd always been like a poet and a writer. He's never particularly successful in that endeavor. But while he was in the Congo, he'd written a poem, which was unpublished in his life, that had the lines, "I sought by love alone to go where God had writ an awful no. I only know I cannot die and leave this love God made, not I." Which people have interpreted to him meaning, I'm not dying a virgin. I'm going, but God made me this way and I'm fucking around.
So is that the theory then, that he never experienced, that he was a virgin until he went to the Congo?
Probably, but he was in the Congo about 19.
19, yeah.
I don't know. Probably. Yeah, I mean, for the times, I don't know if he would have had dalliances with men. He would have had relationship with people in Northern Ireland. So one of the bits of evidence for the diaries being real, there's an internal MI5 memo from 4 days before he was executed, that they tracked down one of the people he referenced in his books. And the memo was only released in 1998. And the idea is like, well, why would they?
If he was gay, why wouldn't he have come on to me?
Why would they forge an internal memo? It's not really that compelling argument, I suppose. Yeah. But at the time, like, no one saw it until whatever, almost 100 years later. And they're like, well, why would they bother forging that? Because they were just doing their due diligence. But Angus Mitchell, he reckons they were forged. He said, the diaries do come out of the Home Office. They seem to control them. He says the diaries are forgeries. Of that, I have no doubt. So what if there really was a Miller? Miller's the guy that they tracked down. There are hundreds of others referred to in the diaries who casements describes and who can be traced as well. It proves nothing. Just because they exist and they might have been gay, it doesn't mean that he was gay. It just means that he knew the name of every gay man from Brazil to fucking Ballymena somehow.
The warp.
Yeah, they might have been gay, but,
the warp and the logic there is... Yeah.
But he appears in quite a few casement things that I've watched. Mm. But I think they're real.
They sound like they're real, and because you've told me now like a few times, I haven't gone and read them yet.
No.
But it does. Then it begs the question that when, like, what's the there's Casement Park, I guess, which was today beat Croke Park. Croke Park's off the list of the stadiums the UK and Ireland joint bid for Euro 2028.
Is it
Croke Park's gone? Casement Park's still in there.
Nice. Yeah, Casement Park doesn't exist.
It's going to be then.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. The Croke Park say no.
I'd say it's just, judging by what they're talking about now with the Katie Taylor fight and stuff, is just incredibly expensive to rent the place. And
But that's because of their own choosing, because they just want it to be for GAA.
Yeah, but also could be for the benefit of the rest of the nation.
Yeah.
Like, it's for things that could really help the country and to get behind. The fact that they're not willing to do that, that, like, the country would, like, the GAA to prosper and also allow Katie Taylor to fight in front of, would be the biggest female sporting event of all time.
Of course.
And it would be in Ireland with an Irish, like, national hero.
Yeah.
That'd be a thing. It would be pretty cool. Yeah. But so it's Collins Barracks is where we do the big party for Pride.
Oh, that's true.
At the end of that.
Yeah.
And I've never really heard Casement referenced as like an LGBTQ plus like figure.
No, and it is insane that I suppose, yeah, it's not insane. People couldn't wrap their head around the fact that he was a gay man for a long time, so it's not really very public knowledge. But it is crazy. Like, when I was reading this, it is crazy that it hasn't become a film. This would make a great, like, 3-part series, or like, he's a man of this time. Like, a gay 1916 leader who fucking was executed for this country, as well as standing up for... Like, he's a hero to... I was researching this, I found a picture of, like, the Congolese community in Dublin during the 2016 commemorations of 1916. They got together and had a celebration for him. He's a hero to native indigenous people in Brazil, Peru, Congo.
Tipperary.
He fought for Irish nationalists. He's a gay icon. He loved dogs. Hey. He's great. Like, it's insane that there isn't a film about him now.
You know, it could be in the works, but no, it is. It's pretty crazy that it's.
And especially because, well, I was like, in 2015 when the gay marriage referendum was, it seems wild that would have been a very compelling argument. I mean, there's lots of compelling arguments, but that one, like, to all the out lads who are thinking of voting no. You know, every pub you've drank in your whole life, and there's like a smattering of faces up on the wall, and most of the time Casement is one of them in a fucking bronze plaque somewhere in the bar. That man was as gay as they come, and he was a fucking national hero.
By God, did he come.
Oh, by God, he did. All up and down, of course, three continents that we know of. Oh, he's in four, probably four. And he was a fucking hero, a nationalist hero. And surely that had put it to bed, as he did many a man. But maybe it did come up during the marriage referendum, didn't hear it.
I didn't either, no.
Because it only seems, again, like reading various different articles, it seems to be after like maybe 2017, 2018, it becomes more, people are going more along the line of that he was gay. But the evidence has been there since the start, but also maybe more since like 99.
Yeah, but there's been a few others as well, I guess, that like Porrig Pierce.
Yeah, but Pierce, this stuff is kind of like, oh, there's a poem here. Oh, there's a verse here that might be taken under. Oh, like this is years and years of graphic.
It's a diary.
This is, there's no two ways about this.
Did Dev have a wife?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about Dev in a second, but we'll just as an aside.
So the man could have such a strong beard and have no facial hair.
Yeah. But as an aside, it is, when did people stop putting plaques of the 1916 leaders in pubs? Like that seems to...
Is there one in the Halfpenny?
Yeah.
We'll find out
I wouldn't
tonight.
Be surprised.
I'm
going to
go in
isn't.
And look at them.
Yeah. Like that seemed to be like the first thing, if you're opening a pub, you get a Guinness tap, you get a harp tap, you get a commemoration of, to the proclamation. There almost certainly is one of those in there, and that has the pictures of the leaders on it. But, you know, if you're opening a bar today, you wouldn't see it. When did that happen?
Whenever Press Up started buying pubs.
Yeah, maybe. There's no respect for the old classics. But in 1934, Casement's cousin Gertrude Bannister went to Eamon de Valera with news that Hollywood was going to make a film about her cousin. Universal Pictures wanted to do the story, but Gertrude said, "The thought of Roger being made the central figure in some sensational Hollywood picture, with perhaps an invented love story inserted to give a popular appeal, is simply revolting." This is I like Gertrude there.
Why is she a Southern dame?
I don't know. Because she's concerned about Hollywood.
What year was this?
1934.
Okay.
I wonder, yeah, because she says her issue, you know, she has an issue with them inserting a made-up love interest. I wonder if she's saying that because of, you know, same reason as me, or did she know he was gay? Because that'd be a bit odd to go see.
Oh, him. I thought you meant it, they would include all of that, but in 1934, no.
What do you mean?
Like if it had been, they wouldn't.
Oh,
have,
yeah,
yeah,
no, no,
they
no,
wouldn't
no.
have touched the, no, no, no. the gay angle on yeah. in 1934.
And whatever about not touching it, but then if you go to see it, if she knew he was gay and you would see it, and he's just like, there's some Kitty O'Hara character in there, be a bit of a slap in the face to him, I suppose. I don't know.
Yeah. Like them saying that was a big deal between Porrig Pierce and Michael Collins.
Yeah, exactly.
Movie Michael Collins.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't
yeah.
think that would have been that big of an issue.
So, Julius Klein from Universal Pictures, he reached out to Dev shortly after that about writing a book about Casement because he wanted files for the film, but Dev shot him down.
Not the first time.
No. So, yeah, Casement's body was left in England after he was hung. But in February 1965, his remains were sent back to Ireland. He told his cousin Gertrude Bannister he didn't want to be left in Pentonville Prison, but brought back to be buried near the family home in Murlock Bay, County Antrim. And by God, we respected his decisions and buried him in Glasnevin Cemetery.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Northern Ireland was a thing at the time, which he hadn't envisioned, I guess. He didn't think that would exist. So they're not going to be able to bury him there in the 60s. So they buried him in Glasnevin Cemetery with the rest of the boys.
Which is still a good place, in fairness, to be. If you're going
to
be buried
somewhere
against your will.
It is, but it's funny to
be
like, we need to get him out of there. It's not what his last wishes were. Let's move him very far away from where he wanted to be. To where we want him to be. For a political statement.
And tourism.
So they have a weird relationship with getting his body back. Because it's the 60s. That's a long time to leave him over there. And it could be to do with the diaries. Dev has a special affection for him. He names his son Rory after him, which I don't. He was born in 1916. Is Roger Rory?
In Irish, probably.
Maybe. But
shows what we know.
I know. He liked him anyway, so he spearheads getting his body back, but then buries it in the wrong place. But that's pretty much it. If you want to read more about Casement, which you should, The Dream of the Celt is a very good book, apparently, by Mario Vargas Llosa about casement. I got a lot of this stuff from that Leopold book that's gone. We watched Heart of Darkness by Kenneth Griffith. It's pretty funny.
Who also did Hang Up Your Brightest Colors.
Yeah, Kenneth Griffith says that
he's going to get his own episode.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
I'll do that one.
Yeah. You said Casement Park in Belfast is named after him. It's also Casement Aerodrome, which is not far from here, where the CIA operates out of. And I also just realized today, Ard Esmond in Dundalk is Casement Heights. I never knew that. That's a neighborhood in Dundalk. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Oh, Bannerstrand by the Wolftones is a song about him. The last note. Well, he's got a really great speech from when he's in court, where he goes hard, and I will record that myself and put that on the Patreon because it's about 4 pages long. But you can hop over there if you want to hear that. And the last note then is at the age of 65, Leopold II started banging a 16-year-old French prostitute by the name of Caroline Lacroix. And he stayed with her. So he stayed with her for 10 years. He died in 1909. And in those 10 years, he gave her a load of money, estates. He gave her like a fancy noble title. She was the Baroness de Vaughan. So when he was buried, Leopold was buried in 1909, he was booed in the funeral procession. But Harshchild, whose book I read for this, he reckoned that it was because of the prostitute and not all the terrible things he'd done in the Congo. Apparently, he had a bad name. He had a lot of mistresses, and apparently that's what they were annoyed at, and not all the other stuff that he'd done. But he died. Anyway, you'd be glad to know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it, I think.
Sure, look.
Casement.
Don't we all?
I think we
have underage prostitutes.
That's true. Some of them just don't have titles.
Let ye without sin. Those who live in glass houses shouldn't fuck teenage prostitutes. We can all see you, Leopold.
Well, Casement deserves his own film, or at least his own Netflix series.
Hmm.
He's the gay James Bond of the Congo. Yes. That's the title.
That's what this episode's called?
Yes.
Okay. Great.
Although it does give away everything, so maybe not. But we'll figure that out. Anyway, that's the end of the episode. That's Casement Part 2. Hop over to the Patreon for more Casement bonus stuff. Or just because you fucking love us.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
There's loads on there.
Yeah,
and buy tickets to the Wild Duck gig.
Oh, yeah. That's probably next week at this stage.
Yeah.
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 There'll be a link to that in the description of this episode. And all the other stuff. But good luck.
Shafter.